Welcome to The Art of Divine Contentment by Thomas Watson. We are continuing to read at page number 203 for this reading. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs, and much more at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray, and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon. As the Apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourself to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will all light literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying. And now to SWRB's reading of The Art of Divine Contentment, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ, for he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by him. John 14:6. Number 5. He that is contented with his condition, to rid himself out of trouble, will not run himself into sin. I deny not, but a Christian may lawfully seek to change his condition. So far as God's providence doth go before, he may follow. But some men will not follow providence, but run before it, as he said, this evil is of the Lord. Why should I wait any longer? 2 Kings VI 33. If God doth not open the door by his providence, they will break it open, and wind themselves out of affliction by sin, bringing their souls into trouble by bringing their estates out of trouble. This is far from holy contentment. This is unbelief broken out into rebellion. A contented Christian is willing to wait God's leisure and will not stir till God open a door. As Paul said in another case, they have beaten us openly, uncondemned, being Romans, and have cast us into prison. And now do they thrust us out privily? Nay, verily, but let them come themselves and fetch us out. Acts XVI 37. So, with reverence, saith the contented Christian, God hath cast me into this condition, and though it be sad and troublesome, yet I will not stir, till God by a clear providence fetch me out. Thus those brave spirited Christians, Hebrews XI 35, they accepted not deliverance, that is, upon base, dishonorable terms. They would rather stay in prison than purchase their liberty by carnal compliance. STS observes on that passage, they might not only have had their enlargement, but been raised to honor and put into offices of trust, yet the honor of religion was dearer to them than either liberty or honor. A contented Christian will not remove till, as the Israelites, he sees a pillar of cloud and fire going before him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. Lamentations 3:26. It is good to stay God's leisure and not to extricate ourselves out of trouble till we see the star of God's providence pointing out a way to us. Chapter XIV, Use 5, containing a Christian directory or rules about contentment. Use 5. I proceed now to a use of discretion to show Christians how they may attain to this divine art of contentment. Certainly it is feasible. Others of God's saints have reached to it. Saint Paul had it. And what do we think of those we read of in that little book of martyrs? Hebrews XI, who had trials of cruel mockings and scourgings, who wandered about in deserts and caves, yet were contented, so that it is possible to be had. And here I shall lay down some rules for holy contentment. Rule 1. Advance faith. All our disquiets do issue immediately from unbelief. It is this that raiseth the storm of discontent in the heart. Oh, set faith a-working. It is the property of faith to silence our doubtings, to scatter our fears, to still the heart when the passions are up. Faith works the heart to a sweet, serene composure. It is not having food and raiment, but having faith which will make us content. Faith chides down passion. When reason begins to sink, let faith swim. Question: how doth faith work contentment? Answer 1. Faith shows the soul that whatever its trials are, yet they are from the hand of a Father. It is indeed a bitter cup, but shall I not drink that cup which my Father hath given me to drink? It is in love to my soul. God corrects with the same love he crowns me. God is now training me up for heaven. He carves me to make me a polished shaft. These sufferings bring forth patience, humility, even the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Hebrews XII 11. And if God can bring such sweet fruit out of a sour stalk, let him graft me where he pleases. Thus faith brings the heart to holy contentment. Answer 2. Faith sucks the honey of contentment out of the hive of the promise. Christ is the vine. The promises are the clusters of grapes that grow upon this vine. And faith presseth the sweet wine of contentment out of these spiritual clusters of the promises. I will show you but one cluster. The Lord will give grace and glory. Psalms LXXXIV 11. Here is enough for faith to live upon. The promise is the flower out of which faith distills the spirits and quintessence of divine contentment. In a word, faith carries up the soul and makes it aspire after more noble and generous delights that earth affords, and to live in the world, above the world. Would you lead contented lives? Live up to the height of your faith. Rule 2. Labor for assurance. Oh, let us get the interest cleared between God and our own souls. Interest is a word much in use, a pleasing word. Interest in great friends. Interest money. Oh, if there be an interest worth looking after, it is an interest between God and the soul. Labor to say, my God. To be without money and without friends and without God too, Ephesians 2:12, is sad. But he whose faith doth flourish into assurance, that can say, I know whom I have believed, as St. Paul, 2 Timothy 1:12, that man hath enough to give his heart contentment. When a man's debts are paid and he can go abroad without fear of arrest, what contentment is this? Oh, let your title be cleared. If God be ours, whatever we want in the creature is infinitely made up in him. Do I want bread? I have Christ, the bread of life. Am I defiled? His blood is like the trees of the sanctuary, not only for meat, but medicine. Ezekiel XLVII 12. If anything in the world be worth laboring for, it is to get sound evidences that God is ours. If this be once cleared, what can come amiss, no matter what storms I meet with, so that I know where to put in for harbor? He that hath God to be his God is so well contented with his condition that he doth not much care whether he hath anything else. To rest in a condition where a Christian cannot say God is his God is matter of fear, and if he can say so truly and yet is not contented is matter of shame. David encouraged himself in the Lord his God, 1 Samuel XXX6. It was sad with him. Ziklag burnt, his wives taken captive. He lost all and had nearly lost his soldiers' hearts too, for they spake of stoning him. Yet he had the ground of contentment within him, namely an interest in God, and this was a pillar of support to his spirit. He that knows God is his, and all that is in God is for his good. If this doth not satisfy, I know nothing will. Rule 3. Get a humble spirit. The humble man is the contented man. If his estate be low, his heart is lower than his estate. Therefore, be content. If his esteem in the world be low, he that is little in his own eyes will not be much troubled to be little in the eyes of others. He hath a meaner opinion of himself than others can have of him. The humble man studies his own unworthiness. He looks upon himself as less than the least of God's mercies. Genesis 32:10. And then a little will content him. He cries out with Paul that he is the chief of sinners. 1 Timothy 1:15. Therefore doth not murmur, but admire. He doth not say his comforts are small, but his sins are great. He thinks it a mercy he is out of hell, therefore is contented. He doth not go to carve out a more happy condition to himself. He knows the worst piece God cuts him is better than he deserves. A proud man is never contented. He is one that hath a high opinion of himself, therefore under small blessings is disdainful, under small crosses impatient. The humble spirit is the contented spirit. If his cross be light, he reckons it in the inventory of his mercies. If it be heavy, yet takes it upon his knees, knowing that when his estate is worst, it is to make him better. Where you lay humility for the foundation, contentment will be the superstructure. Rule 4. Keep a clear conscience. 1 Timothy 3:9. Contentment is the manna that is laid up in the ark of a good conscience. Oh, take heed of indulging any sin. It is as natural for guilt to breed disquiet as for putrid matter to breed vermin. Sin lies as Jonah in the ship. It raises a tempest. If dust or motes get into the eye, they make the eye water and cause a soreness in it. If the eye be clear, then it is free from that soreness. If sin get into the conscience, which is as the eye of the soul, then grief and disquiet breed there. But keep the eye of conscience clear, and all is well. What Solomon saith of a good appetite, I may say of a good conscience. To the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. Proverbs 7. So, to a good conscience, every bitter thing is sweet. It can pick contentment out of the cross. A good conscience turns the waters of Marah into wine. Would you have a quiet heart? Get a smiling conscience. I wonder not to hear Paul say he was in every state content when he could make that triumph. I have lived in all good conscience to this day. Acts 1. When once a man's reckonings are clear, it must needs let in abundance of contentment into the heart. Good conscience can suck contentment out of the bitterest drug. Under slanders, our rejoicing is this, the testimony of our conscience. 2 Corinthians 1:12. In case of imprisonment, Paul had his prison songs and could play the sweet lesson of contentment when his feet were in the stocks. Acts 25. One calls it the paradise of a good conscience. And if it be so, then in prison we may be in paradise. When the times are troublesome, good conscience makes a calm. If conscience be clear, what though the days be cloudy? Is it not a contentment to have a friend always by to speak a good word for us? Such a friend is conscience. Good conscience, as David's harp, drives away the evil spirit of discontent. When thoughts begin to arise, and the heart is disquieted, conscience saith to a man, as the king did to Nehemiah, Why is thy countenance sad? Nehemiah 2:2. So saith conscience, Hast not thou the seed of God in thee? Art not thou an heir of the promise? Hast not thou a treasure that thou canst never be plundered of? Why is thy countenance sad? Oh, keep conscience clear, and you shall never want contentment. For a man to keep the pipes of his body, the veins and arteries free from colds and obstructions, is the best way to maintain health. so to keep conscience clear and to preserve it from the obstructions of guilt is the best way to maintain contentment. First, conscience is pure and then peaceable. Rule 5. Learn to deny yourselves. Look well to your affections. Bridle them in. Do two things. 1. Mortify your desires. 2. Moderate your delights. 1. Mortify your desires. Mortify, therefore, your inordinate affection. Colossians 3:5. In the Greek, it is your evil affection. To show that our desires, when they are inordinate, are evil. Crucify your desires. Be as dead men. A dead man hath no appetite. Question. How should a Christian martyr his desires? Answer. 1. Get a right judgment of the things here below. They are mean, beggarly things. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? Proverbs 5. The appetite must be guided by reason. The affections are the feet of the soul. Therefore they must follow the judgment, not lead it. Answer 2. Often seriously meditate on mortality. Death will soon crop those flowers which we delight in and pull down the fabric of those bodies which we so garnish and beautify. Think when you are locking up your money in your chest, who shall shortly lock you up in your coffin. Number 2. Moderate your delights. Set not your hearts too much upon any creature. Psalm 11:10. What we overlove, we shall overgrieve. Rachel set her heart too much upon her children, and when she had lost them, she lost herself too. Such a vein of grief was opened as could not be staunched. She refused to be comforted. Here was discontent. When we let any creature lie too near our heart, when God pulls away that comfort, a piece of our heart is rent away with it. Too much fondness ends in frowardness. Those that would be content in the want of mercy must be moderate in the enjoyment. Jonathan dipped the rod in honey. He did not thrust it in. Let us take heed of engulfing ourselves in pleasure. Better have a spare diet than by having too much to surfeit. Rule 6. Get much of heaven into your heart. Spiritual things satisfy. The more of heaven is in us, the less of earth will content us. He that hath once tasted the love of God, Psalms 11:5, his thirst is much quenched toward sublunary things. The joys of God's Spirit are heart-filling and heart-cheering joys. He that hath these hath heaven begun in him. Romans 17. And shall we not be content to be in heaven? Oh, get a sublime heart. Seek the things that are above. Colossians 3:1. Fly aloft in your affections. Thirst after the graces and comforts of the Spirit. The eagle that flies above in the air fears not the stinging of the serpent. The serpent creeps on his belly and stings only such creatures as go upon the earth. Discontent is a serpent that stings only an earthly heart. A heavenly soul that, with the eagle flies aloft, finds abundantly enough in God to give contentment, and is not stung with the cares and disquiets of the world. Rule 7. Look not so much on the dark side of your condition as on the light. God doth chequer his providences, white and black, as the pillar of cloud had its light side and dark. Look on the light side of thy estate. Who looks on the back side of a landscape? Suppose thou art cast in a lawsuit. There is the dark side. Yet thou hast some land left. There is the light side. Thou hast sickness in thy body. There is the dark side, but grace in thy soul. There is the light side. Thou hast a child taken away. There is the dark side. Thy husband lives. There is the light side. God's providences in this life are various, represented by those speckled horses among the myrtle trees, which were the red and white. Zechariah 1:8. Mercies and afflictions are interwoven. God doth speckle his work. One, oh, saith one, I want such a comfort, but weigh all thy mercies in the balance, and that will make thee content. If a man did want a finger, would he be so discontented for the loss of that as not to be thankful for all the other parts and joints of his body? Look on the light side of your condition, and then all your discontent will easily be dispersed. Do not pore upon your losses, but ponder upon your mercies. What? Wouldst thou have no cross at all? Why should one man think to have all good things when he himself is good but in part? Wouldst thou have no evil about thee? Who has so much evil in thee? Thou art not fully sanctified in this life. How then thinkest thou to be fully satisfied? Never look for perfection of contentment till there be perfection of grace. Rule 8. Consider in what a posture we stand here in the world. 1. We are in a military condition. We are soldiers. 2 Timothy 2:3. Now a soldier is content with anything. What though he hath not his stately house, his rich furniture, his soft bed, his full table? Yet he doth not complain. He can lie in straw as well as down. He minds not his lodging, but his thoughts run upon dividing the spoil and the garland of honor that shall be set upon his head. And for hope of this, he is content to run away hazard, endure any hardship. Were it not absurd to hear him complain that he wants such provision and is fain to lie out in the fields? A Christian is a military person. He fights the Lord's battles. He is Christ's ensign bearer. Now, what though he endures hard fare and the bullets fly about? He fights for a crown and therefore must be content. 2. We are in a sojourning condition, pilgrims and travelers. A man that is in a strange country is contented with any diet or usage. He is glad of anything. Though he hath not such respect or attendance as he looks for at home, nor is capable of the privileges and immunities of that place, he is content. He knows when he comes into his own country, he hath lands to inherit, and there he shall have honor and respect. So it is with the child of God. He is in a pilgrim condition. I am a stranger with thee, and a sojourner, as all my fathers were. Psalm XXXIX:12. Therefore, let a Christian be content. He is in the world, but not of the world. He is born of God, and is a citizen of the New Jerusalem. Hebrews XII:22. Therefore, though he hunger and thirst, and have no certain dwelling place, 1 Corinthians 5:11, yet he must be content. It will be better when he comes into his own country. 3. We are in a mendicant condition. We are beggars. We beg at heaven's gate. Give us this day our daily bread. We live upon God's alms. Therefore, must be content with anything. A beggar must not pick and choose. He is contented with the refuse. Oh, why dost thou murmur? Thou art a beggar, and art fed out of the alms basket of God's providence? Rule 9. Let not your hopes depend upon these outward things. Lean not upon sandy pillars. We often build our comfort upon such a friend or estate, and when that prop is removed, all our joy is gone, and our hearts begin either to fail or fret. A lame man leans on his crutches, and if they break, he is undone. Let not thy contentment go upon crutches which may soon fail. The ground of contentment must be within thyself. The Greek word which is used for contentment signifies self-sufficiency. A Christian hath that from within which is able to support him, that strength of faith and good hope through grace, which bears up his heart in the deficiency of outward comforts. The philosophers of old, when their estates were gone, yet could take contentment in the goods of the mind, their learning and virtue. And shall not a believer much more in the grace of the Spirit, that rich enamel and embroidery of the soul? Say with thyself, if friends leave me, if riches take wings, yet I have that within which comforts me, namely, a heavenly treasure. I bear all my treasure with me. When the blossoms of my estate are blown off, still there is the sap of contentment in the root of my heart. I have still an interest in God, and that interest cannot be broken off. Oh, never place your felicity in these dull and beggarly things here below. Rule 10. Let us often compare our condition. Question. How should I compare? Answer. Make this five-fold comparison. 1. Let us compare our condition and our desert together. If we have not what we desire, we have more than we deserve. For our mercies, we have deserved less. For our afflictions, we have deserved more. 1. In regard of our mercies, we have deserved less. What can we deserve? Can man be profitable to the Almighty? We live upon free grace. Alexander gave a great gift to one of his subjects. The man, being much taken with it, this, saith he, is more than I am worthy of. I do not give thee this, saith the king, because thou art worthy of it, but I give a gift, like Alexander. Whatever we have is not merit, but bounty. The least bit of bread is more than God owes us. We can bring fagots to our own burning, but not one flower to the garland of our salvation. He that hath the least mercy will die in God's debt. 2. In regard of our afflictions, we have deserved more. Thou hast punished us less than our iniquities deserve. Ezra, IX:13. Is our condition sad? We have deserved it should be worse. Hath God taken away our estate from us? He might have taken away Christ from us. Hath he thrown us into prison? He might have thrown us into hell. He might as well condemn us as whip us. These considerations should make us contented. 2. Let us compare our condition with others, and this will make us content. We look at those who are above us. Let us look at those who are below us. We see one in his silks, another in his sackcloth. One hath the waters of a full cup wrung out to him. Another is mingling his drink with tears. How many pale faces do we behold, whom not sickness but want hath brought into a consumption? Think of this and be content. It is worse with those who perhaps deserve better than we and are higher in God's favor. Am I in prison? Was not Daniel in a worse place, namely, the lion's den? Do I live in a mean cottage? Look on those who are banished from their houses. We read of the primitive saints that they wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, of whom the world was not worthy. Hebrews XI:37-38. Hast thou a gentle fit of an ague? Look on those who are tormented with the stone and gout, etc. Others of God's children have had greater afflictions and have borne them better than we. Daniel fed upon pulse and drank water, yet was fairer than those who ate of the king's portion. Daniel 1:15. Some Christians who have been in a lower condition, that have fed upon pulse and water, have looked better, namely, been more patient and contented than we who enjoy abundance. Do others rejoice in affliction, and do we repine? Can they take up their cross and walk cheerfully under it? And do we, under a lighter cross, murmur? 3. Let us compare our condition with Christ's upon earth. What a poor, mean condition was he pleased to be in for us. He was contented with anything. For ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that, though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor. 2 Corinthians VIII 9. He could have brought down a house from heaven with him, or have challenged the high places of the earth, but he was contented to be in the winepress, that we might be in the wine cellar. And to live poor, that we might die rich. The manger was his cradle. He, who is now preparing mansions for us in heaven, had none for himself on earth. He had not where to lay his head. Christ, being in the form of God, took upon him the form of a servant. Philippians 2:6-7. We read not of any sums of money he had. When he wanted money, he was fain to work a miracle for it. Matthew 27:27. Jesus Christ was in a low condition. He was never high, but when he was lifted up upon the cross, and that was his humility, he was content to live poor and die cursed. Oh, compare your condition with Christ's. 4. Let us compare our condition with what it was once, and this will make us content. Let us compare our spiritual estate with what it was once. What were we when we lay in our blood? We were heirs apparent to hell, having no right to pluck one leaf from the tree of the promise. It was a Christless and a hopeless condition. Ephesians 2:12. But now God hath cut off the entail of hell and damnation. He hath taken you out of the wild olive of nature and engrafted you into Christ, making you living branches of that living vine. He hath not only caused the light to shine upon you, but into you. 2 Corinthians 5:6. And hath interested you in all the privileges of sonship. Is not there here that which may make the soul content? Let us compare our temporal estate with what it was once. Alas, we had nothing when we stepped out of the womb, for we brought nothing into this world. 1 Timothy 7. If we have not that which we desire, we have more than we brought with us. We brought nothing with us but sin. Other creatures bring something with them into the world. The lamb brings wool, the silkworm silk, etc. But we brought nothing with us. What if our condition at present be low? It is better than it was once. Therefore, having food and raiment, let us be content. Whatever we have, God's providence fetched it in to us. And if we lose all, yet we have as much as we brought with us. This was that which made Job content. Naked came I out of my mother's womb. Job 1:21. As if he had said, though God hath taken away all from me, yet why should I murmur? I am as rich now as I was when I came into the world. I have as much left as I brought with me. Naked came I hither. Therefore, blessed be the name of the Lord. Number 5. Let us compare our condition with what it shall be shortly. There is a time shortly coming when, if we had all the riches of India, they would do us no good. We must die, and can carry nothing with us. So saith the Apostle. It is certain we can carry nothing out of the world. 1 Timothy 7. Therefore it follows, having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. Verse 8. Open the rich man's grave and see what is there. You may find the miser's bones, but not his riches. Were we to live forever here, or could we carry our riches into another world, then indeed we might be discontented when we look upon our empty bags. But it is not so. God may presently seal a warrant for death to apprehend us. And when we die, we cannot carry our estate with us. Honor and riches descend not into the grave. Why then are we troubled at our outward condition? Why do we disguise ourselves with discontent? Oh, lay up a stock of grace. Be rich in faith and good works. These riches will follow us. Revelation 13. No other coin but grace will pass current in heaven. Silver and gold will not go there. Labor to be rich towards God. Luke 21. And as for other things, be not solicitous. We shall carry nothing with us. Rule 11. Be not anxious to bring your condition to your mind, but bring your mind to your condition. The way for a Christian to be contented is not by raising his estate higher, but by bringing his spirit lower. Not by making his barns wider, but his heart narrower. One man a whole lordship or manor will not content. Another is satisfied with a few acres of land. What is the difference? The one studies to satisfy curiosity, the other necessity. The one thinks what he may have, the other what he may spare. Rule 12. Study the vanity of the creature. It matters not whether we have more or less of these things. They have vanity written upon the frontispiece of them. The world is like a shadow that declineth. It is delightful, but deceitful. It promiseth more than we find, and it fails us when we have most need of it. All the world rings changes, and is constant only in its disappointments. What then if we have less of that which is, at best, but voluble and fluid? The world is as full of mutation as motion, and what if God cuts us short in sublunaries? The more a man hath to do with the world, the more he hath to do with vanity. The world may be compared to ice, which is smooth but slippery, or to the Egyptian temples, without very beautiful and sumptuous, but within nothing to be seen but the image of an ape. Every creature saith concerning satisfaction, "It is not in me." The world is not a filling, but a flying comfort. It is like a game at tennis. Providence bandies her golden balls, first to one, then to another. Why are we discontented at the loss of these things? But because we expect that from them which is not, and repose that in them which we ought not. Jonah was exceeding glad of the gourd. Jonah 6. What a vanity was it! Is it much to see a withering gourd smitten, or to see the moon dressing itself in a new shape and figure? Rule 13. Get fancy regulated. It is the fancy which raiseth the price of things above their real worth. What is the reason one tulip is worth £5, another perhaps not worth 1 shilling? Fancy raiseth the price. The difference is rather imaginary than real. So why it should be better to have thousands than hundreds is because men fancy it so. If we could fancy a lower condition better, as having less care in it and less account, it would be far more eligible. The water that springs out of the rock drinks as sweet as if it came out of a golden chalice. Things are as we fancy them. Ever since the fall, the fancy is distempered. God saw that the imagination of the thoughts of his heart were evil. Genesis 5. Fancy looks through wrong spectacles. Pray that God will sanctify your fancy. A lower condition would content if the mind and fancy were set aright. Diogenes preferred his cynical life before Alexander's royalty. He fancied his little cloister best. Fabricius, a poor man, yet despised the gold of King Pharus. Could we cure a distempered fancy, we might soon conquer a discontented heart. Rule 14. Consider how little will suffice nature. The body is but of small capacity, and is easily recruited. Christ hath taught us to pray for our daily bread. Nature is content with a little. Not to thirst, not to starve is enough, saith Gregory Nazianzen. Meat and drink is a Christian's riches, saith Jerome. And the apostle saith, having food and raiment, let us be content. The stomach is sooner filled than the eye. How quickly would a man be content if he would study rather than to satisfy his hunger than his humor? Rule 15. Believe the present condition is best for us. Flesh and blood is not a competent judge. Surfeited stomachs are for banqueting stuff, but a man that regards his health is rather for solid food. Vain men fancy such a condition best, and would flourish in their bravery, whereas a wise Christian hath his will melted into God's will, and thinks it best to be at his finding. God is wise. He knows whether we need food or physique, and if we could acquiesce in providence, the quarrel would soon be at an end. Oh, what a strange creature would man be if he were what he could wish himself. Be content to be at God's allowance. God knows which is the fittest pasture to put his sheep in. Sometimes a more barren ground doth well, whereas rank pasture may rot. Do I meet with such a cross? God shows me what the world is. He hath no better way to wean me than by putting me to a stepmother. Does God stint me in my allowance? He is now dieting me. Do I meet with losses? It is that God may keep me from being lost. Every cross wind shall at last blow me to the right port. Did we believe that condition best, which God doth parcel out to us, we should cheerfully submit and say, the lines are fallen to me in pleasant places. Rule 16. Do not too much indulge the flesh. The flesh is a worse enemy than the devil. It is a bosom traitor. An enemy within is worst. If there were no devil to tempt, the flesh would be another Eve to tempt to the forbidden fruit. Oh, take heed of giving way to it. Whence is all our discontent but from the fleshy part? The flesh puts us upon the immoderate pursuit of the world. It consults for ease and plenty, and if it be not satisfied, then discontents begin to arise. Oh, let it not have the reins. Martyr the flesh. In spiritual things, the flesh is a sluggard. In secular things, a horse leech, crying, give, give. The flesh is an enemy to suffering. It will sooner make a man a courtier than a martyr. Oh, keep it under. Put its neck under Christ's yoke. Stretch and nail it to his cross. Never let a Christian look for contentment in his spirit till there be confinement in his flesh. Rule 17. Meditate much on the glory which shall be revealed. There are great things laid up in heaven. Though it be sad for the present, yet let us be content in that it will shortly be better. It is but a while, and we shall be with Christ, bathing our souls in the fountain of his love. We shall never complain of wants or injuries any more. Our cross may be heavy, but one sight of Christ will make us forget all our former sorrows. There are two things should give contentment. One, that God will make us able to bear our troubles. 1 Corinthians 10:13. God saith, Chrysostom doth like a lutenist, who will not let the strings of his lute be too slack, lest it spoil the music, nor will he suffer them to be too hard stretched or screwed up, lest they break. So doth God deal with us. He will not let us have too much prosperity, lest this spoil the music of prayer and repentance, nor yet too much adversity, lest the spirit fail before me and the souls which I have made. Isaiah 11:16. 2. When we have suffered a while, 1 Peter 5:10, we shall be perfected in glory. The cross shall be our ladder by which we shall climb up to heaven. Be then content, and the scene will alter. God will ere long turn our water into wine. The hope of this is enough to drive away all distempers from the heart. Blessed be God, it will be better. Here have we no continuing city. Hebrews 11:14. Therefore our afflictions cannot continue. A wise man looks still to the end. The end of the just man is peace. Psalm 37. Methinks the smoothness of the end should make amends for the ruggedness of the way. O eternity, eternity, think often of the kingdom prepared. David was advanced from the field to the throne. First he held his shepherd's staff, and shortly after the royal scepter. God's people may be put to hard services here, but God hath chosen them to be kings to sit upon the throne with the Lord Jesus. This being weighed in the balance of faith would be an excellent means to bring the heart to contentment. Rule 18. Be much in prayer. The last rule for contentment is, be much in prayer. Beg of God that he may work our hearts to this blessed frame. Is any man afflicted? Let him pray. James 5:13. So, is any man discontent? Let him pray. Prayer gives vent.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail-order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."